Good day and welcome to this Dharma talk. And today I would like to talk about fear. And part of the motivation to talk about it is that it's a very common state for many people, for everyone's some point or other. And also because I'm finishing up a year-long program that I'm co-teaching, which is an experimental program that just that will probably offer some more in the future some point. And that's called Path of Fearlessness, where we spent 7 months or so looking at fear and considering it, practicing with it. And it comes to a conclusion this week, and so it's this bringing this topic for this program to a conclusion has it on my mind, and it's what I, so this is what I have to talk about today. And so one thing to, it's very important to I'll say it this way, that that as for people who meditate regularly and are really familiar with their of meditating, being present for experience, and they're familiar with themselves, so that all kinds of things, their life comes along when they meditate. So when they're upset, they sit down to meditate and they feel the upsetness. When they're afraid, they sit down to meditate and the fear is there. When they're angry, they sit down, they get to experience the anger. When they're happy or joyful or peaceful or calm, they sit down to be with that. And sometimes as we sit, some of these things shift and maybe become calmer, more settled, more stable. And then we might be sitting there quietly and then something suddenly appears out of nowhere. And a thought, a memory comes up and there's anger. Memory comes up and or remembering what's going to happen tomorrow, and there's anxiety that comes up. And so over time, it's not a surprise when an emotion appears while we're meditating. And there can be a phenomenal shift that happens when we shift from identifying with the emotion to just recognizing that it's part of what's happening. So to identify means to define oneself by it. So if one's angry, to assume, well, I'm an angry person. People now are going to relate to me, and as if I'm an angry person, that defines who I am and how people will judge me. And same thing with fear. When feels like I am afraid, boy, am I afraid. And when it's kind of leaning into the fear or being captivated by the fear so thoroughly, so fully, we're kind of assuming it's all of who we are. Same thing with happiness and joy. But a shift happens in meditation that at some point that rather than saying, oh, I'm afraid now, the meditator will say, there is fear now. There is anger now. There is happiness now. And there's not there's no inclination to define oneself by it, as if it's a well-worn coat that we're putting on for another time. And it's just a phenomena, just a part and parcel of what's happening. It might be strong, and it might be coursing through the body even, but there is a stability of mind that recognizes there is joy, there is sadness, there is happiness. There is fear, and this ability then to just see it as a phenomena gives rise to a very important possibilities, and this is really when the mindfulness work can really kind of begin becoming stronger, deeper, more penetrating. It's a little bit hard to penetrate phenomena if we identify it, if we define ourselves by it. Because it's almost like we're so fully defined by it, it's like we can't, normally without a mirror, we can't see the eyes that see. we see through the eyes, but we don't turn back and look at the eyes and see them. And if we're really defined by something, by an emotional state, we might know it's there. We might recognize that I'm angry or sad or happy or afraid. But it's kind of like it's the filter through which we see. So it's not really quite accessible for clearly seeing and really recognizing there it is. But when it comes a time when we can say, oh, fear is here, this gives birth to new possibilities. And so I'd like to talk about four categories of possibilities with how we can be with fear once we can just see it, that it's present, and not defined by it or identified by it. And I thought it was fun maybe to come up with an acronym with the letters for fear. And so the first thing we can do is, now that it's become a verb, thanks to Facebook, I think, we can friend our fear. We can befriend it. And this idea of becoming a friend for our fear is a really powerful thing to do. It's the opposite of being afraid of fear. It's the opposite of being averse. It's very radically different than being aversive to fear and angry at fear or ashamed of fear or trying to fix fear or attacking fear or trying to analyze it or figure out what's going on. It's kind of like if you're with a friend, you don't want to do all those things with your friend. You want to be present for your friend and hear what's going on with the friend. You haven't seen the friend for a while, and you want to hear what's happening, what's going on, and be with them in a way that's respectful and caring for them. And it's possible to do that with fear. It's harder to do it when we are defined by it, but it's easier to do if we recognize it, that it's just there. In a kind of way, I'm here and fear is there. Fear is part of me. But it's not quite me, so I can look at it without it kind of being a filter through which I see. And the value of becoming a friend to it is similar to, it's not quite, just, I'm jumping around a little bit, but if a young child is afraid, we don't get angry at it. We don't run away from it. We don't get all flustered and confused and running around in circles when the kid's sitting on the floor being afraid. You don't berate the kid. You sit down with the kid, and maybe put this kid is small enough, you put the kid on your lap or you hold it, and you're there with it. So there's all these ways we say that once we kind of identify, recognize that fear is there, we want to first friend the fear. And one of the great values of friending it is that the fear feels safe. The fear doesn't feel like it's being shamed or pushed away or denied or unwanted, and which is hard, just like it would be hard for a little child. And it's one of the fascinating and wonderful tasks of mindfulness is to help our fear feel safe. And it's a little counterintuitive. You know, some people never thought about helping their fear feel safe. And if we are afraid, if they were defined by it, like, then it's hard to offer anything to the fear. But when we come to that point in practice, when we can recognize fear is present, and we're not so inclined to say, I am afraid, then we have something we can offer the fear. And we become the one who offers safety, offers stability, who offers kindness, who makes space for it to be there, and starts to listen and look more deeply. What's here? And that's the E of fear, and that's to explore the fear. So rather than recoil from the fear, it's to step, in a sense, towards it, to explore it, to be with it, to feel it more fully, And one of the first things we can do in exploring it is we can try to assess whether the fear is appropriate or not. we can try to see, is this an appropriate fear to have, or is it not? Is it a real fear, or is it not? Is it a healthy fear to have, or is it not healthy? Or my favorite pairing, is it helpful fear, or is it not helpful? And some fear clearly is helpful to have. It protects us, and sometimes we need protection. There are times when I'm driving my car or I'm walking on a street where I feel a little bit afraid. There's a little bit of fear there that's kind of inseparable inside of me from a sense of caution. And sometimes it is a little bit scary. Maybe if I was different than who I am, I wouldn't be afraid of certain kind of traffic situations. But I don't think it's necessarily wrong, because death can be instantaneous in some of these, crossing some sidewalks, some crosswalks, the way some drivers drive. So the fear protects us. Look before you walk across the crosswalk or something. And so in Buddhism, one of the appropriate fears is a fear of doing something, of oneself doing something that injures one's own integrity, that injures one's own sensitivity to compassion, to kindness, to honesty. Harms one's sensitivity or one's orientation to live a life that doesn't cause harm to anyone else. When we feel like we're in the danger of saying something to someone that's very unkind and hurtful, to feel that fear, no, this is dangerous. I don't think I should say this. I should be careful here. The mood that I'm in right now is little dangerous mood I'm in. I could easily snap at someone and later regret what I've done, what I've said. So I'm afraid of myself a little bit because of this mood. I see what I've done before. And so I'm going to be cautious. Maybe I'm going to learn to hold my tongue, or maybe I'm even going to avoid certain stressful situations when I'm in this mood, if I can avoid them. So the idea of we have something to protect here. Also, we're afraid to hurt people. And the simple fear of not wanting to hurt others is a very healthy, I think, fear to have. They say in the ancient world, in the teachings of the Buddha, that people who are practitioners have fear for causing the slightest fault, slightest harm. And hopefully this is not seen as a debilitating fear, a fear which diminishes who we are, but actually is a fear that protects what's the best in us and allows it to grow. So Buddhism recognizes healthy fear, but there's also unhelpful fear, the fear that is debilitating, the fear that does freeze us in a way, or inhibits us, or keeps us from living a full life or engage properly in the world. Sometimes it's fear that causes us to harm others. Sometimes it's fear that causes us to harm ourselves, because we're so afraid of the alternative, and so we keep ourselves in check and close down because of it or collapse. So as we explore fear, we can recognize when it seems helpful and when it seems not helpful. And even when it's principle, fear can be helpful. The strength of the fear, or the way that we engage in the fear or take in the fear, can be debilitating, can be limiting. And so to this idea of exploring the fear, what's going on here? What's happening here for me? Is a wonderful stance, wonderful kind of sense of inner strength that begins to operate from the stability of practice, of mindfulness. What is this? What's going on here? And one of the things we can ask is what we're afraid of. So this question of this idea of exploring fear, I see it as a movement of respect, that we respect the fear. We're not belittling fear or belittling ourselves because we are fear. And I like to think that every fear that we have should be respected because it's a messenger. Sometimes it's a messenger that there is, in fact, a danger. But sometimes it's a messenger that something inside of us feels threatened. And it's possible to feel, and so sometimes it's important to look and see, what's the real danger? Explore, is there a danger right now? And sometimes in the here and now, what we're afraid of is not present. And that's a fascinating thing to realize, that what we're afraid of is partly a product of our imagination. And some people have said that anxiety is completely an issue of imagination. It might be a real imagination, but it's imagining what's going to happen in the future. It's predicting something. Sometimes it's a wise prediction, but then it has anxiety kind of lives in us and simmers inside. But some people have chronic anxiety. It just kind of almost a stance. They've learned there's been so much pain and so much danger for them in their life that it becomes kind of habitual and to be expected. There's always a threat, always something's going to happen that's dangerous. And we don't know what it is. There's nothing concrete right here and now. But in that sense, it's imaginary. It's potentially something here. So we can see clearly, you know, and to see that it's not present, maybe can give a breathing room that here and now, maybe it's not as dangerous as we thought, and there could be some relaxation. Also, we can look at, what we're afraid of, but for Dharma practice, a very significant exploration of fear is to look and see what's being threatened. What is it that's really going on here with inside of me and that I'm afraid that's going to be hurt or damaged, or what is it that feels threatened? And sometimes what's being threatened is real enough. Integrity is kind of real enough, important enough to protect. But sometimes what's being protected doesn't really have such a strong, real basis. Sometimes what's being threatened are the constructs that we live under, the constructs of self, the ideas, how we've identified us, how we've constructed our idea of who we are. So, for example, if a person constructs the idea of themselves as they need to be wise and funny all the time, then anything that if they feel fear, maybe it's because they're how other people see them is being threatened, that their idea, their identity as being a wise and funny person is threatened. But that the idea of being there's no need to be a wise and funny person. That's a constructed particular notion, idea. Without that idea, that can't be threatened. The idea that we have to be someone that everyone likes, that we have to be someone who we are someone, or what's being threatened is that we're somehow an undesirable person, and so we're constantly being threatened by everyone because we're afraid we're going to be pushed away by people or rejected by people. And so it gets like a little bit more complicated when the what's being threatened is a little bit of a imagination, a concept, an idea, a construct, and it maybe doesn't quite exactly have to be there. Maybe we're stuck on some idea that doesn't have to be there. Like I know when I was younger, I thought it was a life and death matter almost, you know, whether someone liked me or didn't like me. And so I was had a lot of fear about social fear, about, and you know, I was constantly assessing and wondering and hoping that people would like me, and it was a big revelation to me to realize that everyone doesn't have to like me. It's okay if some people don't like me, and I don't have to constantly be concerned about it. And to see that begin to kind of shed and drop away created a lot more peace inside of me, social peace and ease. And in fact, sometimes people don't like me, and that's okay. They're allowed to do that, and sometimes people do, and that's nice too. So this idea of exploring, there's a whole series of things that can be explored around fear, but the important principle is to not be caught by the fear, so that we can't. And one way not to be caught by it is to explore it. Take the initiative. Okay, let's discover what's going on here. And there's all these different ways of discovery, and you can have your own way. But just keep looking and feeling and getting to know. The A of fear is to really allow it to be there. The more we can discover it, more we can explore it, and then we really allow it. But not allow it to run us and tell us what to do and how to see things. But this is really now a continuation of this. There is fear here. I'm not the fear, but there is fear here with me, in me. And then to discover how it appears physically. What's the physical manifestation of fear? And then allow that physicality of fear to be there, almost as if you get out of the way from it. And sometimes it's best to do this in short bouts, especially when there's a terror or a very strong fear that is connected to all this. It's better not to explore it and be with it for very long, but just to touch into it for a while, and then pull away and come back to another day, and slowly kind of befriend it, slowly get to know it. But at some point, the beautiful art of mindfulness is to really allow it to be there and allow it without our reactivity around it, without our needing it to be different. So it's just a little bit an extension of befriending the fear and allowing it. And part of the value of that is that our inner life knows how to take care of itself, knows how to unwind, knows how to release, knows how to morph into what needs to happen next. And so if we can learn the art of just allowing the fear to be there, it's impressive what can happen. And that's also a hard skill to learn when the habit is we have to analyze it, or we have to engineer a change, or we have to fix it, or something like that. And to learn how to allow it in meditation is a wonderful skill, because some fears, maybe we can't get rid of it or will always be with us. But with the art of allowing it, befriending it, knowing it's there, exploring it, and allowing it, can mean that we might be able to have the fear be present, but not be inhibited or limited by it. We bring it along. It sits on our left shoulder. And it's there with us. We know it's there. But we're not going to stop what we're doing. It's not going to get us to cower or shut down or not live our life as we want to live it. But we allow the fear comes along and accompanies us. And it's there. We recognize it's present. But we know how to allow it so that it can just be there and not interfere. And then the R of fear is to release. As that's the freedom part of fear. And that has different sides of release. Sometimes the fear is released and it's no longer there. That especially if the underlying thing that was threatened no longer is there. Or that we realize that what was threatened doesn't really exist. It has no real kind of substantial existence. And so the constructs of self and the self-definitions we have, when we learn to be at peace without a self-definition, be at peace without a self-construct we're trying to build up or defend or protect or hide from people, then that fear, that thing that's, there's nothing there threatened around self-identity. And so people, all kinds of things people can do, they might, you know, they can't hurt that identity because we're not holding on to that identity. We're not defining ourselves by that. And it just goes right through. And so we're free of it. And sometimes what's being released is not the fear, but rather is our clinging or attachment or selfing or identification with the fear. And we release ourselves from the fear. The fear is still there, but we are released from it. And then it's much easier to have the fear be present and just live our life as we want to or as is appropriate. So to friend the fear, to explore the fear, to allow the fear, and to release in relationship to the fear. These are four things to explore, but the emphasis for this talk is this is meant for people who have capable of having some disidentification from fear. Not disassociation from it, but disidentification in the sense that they don't define themselves by their fear, but they're able to sit, be quiet, and breathe easily perhaps, and recognize, oh, there is fear. Fear is present. I'm not the fear, but boy, is there fear present. That fear is strong, but, you know, I'm not the fear. And then that allows for this interesting phenomena, interesting practice of friend the fear, explore the fear, allow the fear, and release the fear. And then fear has become a fourfold practice that we engage in. So next time you feel fear, you might remember that fear is an acronym for a practice that we look fear, where we respect the fear by getting to know it well. It's a messenger. Do we understand what the message is? So thank you very much, and may you explore your fear and discover the wonderful place inside where there is no fear, because it's a place that cannot be threatened. So thank you.